You are listening to Podcasters of Horror, a podcast about exploring horror anthologies from film and TV, as part of the Super Network, with your hosts, Super Marcy.
And he just gave off, like, very creepy vibes, so you're always very unsure of this guy.
And the terrible Australian, B. Germine.
Which, in that version, it's a Krusty the Clown doll that's harassing Homer.
This podcast may contain coarse language.
It just kept getting weirder and weirder, and what the f*** is up with this house?
Adult themes.
You know, she's only just a little girl, but he really is very mean to her.
And potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Listener discretion is advised. For more information, please visit supermarcy.com or see the show notes. To show your support, you can join us on Patreon at patreon.com/thesupernetwork. Please enjoy the show.
G'day everyone, this is B. Germine, aka The Terrible Aussie, and welcome back to episode 27 of Podcasters of Horror, the podcast which originally started as a retrospective on Masters of Horror and other works from Mick Garris, and then slowly went into other anthology film and TV shows. And with me, as always, is my very awesome co-host, the one, the only, Super Marcy. Hello, Marcy, how are you?
Hey, hey, we are back, back again, back on the regular schedule with Podcasters of Horror, and I'm very happy and excited because horror anthologies are great and wonderful.
Indeed, indeed. Like, I don't know if there's any other podcasts out there, Marcy, that explore horror anthology film and TV shows. We may be the only one. And if that is the case, I'm kind of surprised nobody else has thought up this idea when we started the show.
Yeah, copyright Beat Marcy right now.
Exactly.
Or 27
exactly.
27 episodes ago.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. 27 episodes ago is like, for us, is like years and years ago.
A little bit.
But Marcy, we're not alone on this podcast because we have a very special guest that would you like to introduce him to our audience?
Yes, we have a first-time guest on this podcast, but also the Super Network. So he's losing his Super Network podcast virginity, and we couldn't be happier to have him with us. Please welcome Lathaniel, and you may know him as Lathaniel Gamers on Twitch and YouTube. Hello, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Indeed.
Well, you're very welcome.
So both of you wanted to say hi at the same time. That's good.
Yes. Indeed, indeed. Well, we're excited that you're on the show, Lathaniel, because Marcy and I have known you for quite a while, and we always wanted you to come on the show at some point. So we're very, very excited that you're here and to talk about the topic at hand for this episode.
I'm very, very keen. I've been watching your show for a while, and I mean, I've known Marcy for forever, and I've known you for also forever, and it's just good to be able to talk about a whole lot of horror stuff in between, so...
Definitely, definitely. And being that you are our first-time guest on this show, I'll tell our audience, like, what do you do in terms of your content, and also, like, what is it about the horror genre that you like diving into through all of your projects?
Well, for me, I've been a content creator for about 14 years. Whenever it comes to anything to do with horror, that's been my main area, because I've just always felt that it is a an area that not a lot of people have the ability to be able to explore. And if they did, they would either have issues when it comes to certain topics that are at hand, or most of the time they get a little too scared of what's going on. So when it comes to me, I see it as a roller coaster of emotions that you have the ability to be able to push through and see these incredible works of art that not many people would even know exist. And to be able to appreciate something like that is just something that I wanted to be able to show when it comes to games, when it comes to chatting about movies, series, anything else that's like that. And I've been doing that for, 14 years.
So it's funny. It's like about... Oh my God, what year are we in?
We're in 2024, Marcy.
It's almost, I was going to say, it's almost as long as we've been doing it. And then I've realized, no, it's probably actually like 15 or 16 years. How old am I now?
Jeepers, Jones.
Marcy, we're all three of us are the old pros when it comes to this stuff. We were doing this stuff back when, before all these young whippersnappers were like creating their own podcasts and all that.
Yeah. We're OGs in the content space, and especially horror, because it's like me and Bede, in as far as like creating or writing reviews, talking about movies, it was based in horror. It's like at that time, I think Wolf Creek had been out a few years, so Bede was all about the Wolf Creek, the Terror Australis, and I didn't know how to say Bede, so I called him the Terrible Australian. We've been pretty much like watching horror movies, swapping movie suggestions for the longest time. And it's, I think if it wasn't for each other, there would be so many movies we wouldn't have seen.
Mm.
It's kind of crazy. So horror is the rope that binds us all together.
So I'm here with two other veterans. Sweet.
Yes. also, don't tell Jigsaw. I don't know if he's still polite, but he might tie us up in a trap. So I'm a little scared now.
Well, don't take life for granted.
Yeah.
Indeed. But for this episode of the show, Marcy, we're going back to a topic we haven't done on Podcasters of Horror for a little while now. And that, of course, is the anthology TV series Channel Zero. Now, we've talked about the first two seasons of the show, which of course were Candle Cove and then No End House. But it has been a while since we last tackled it, because I think it might have been about over a year and a half since we last talked about Channel Zero.
That would be thanks to the hiatus and finding the time, but now we're back on schedule and recording. It was like this was top of the list to get back to, because I think for the both of us, we both really enjoyed Candle Cove and No End House. And of course, you can go back and listen to those episodes with our different guests for that. But yeah, I was very excited to tackle another season, because there's only four, so it is a shorter one. But yeah, I'm excited for this one.
Indeed. And we might as well get straight into it and talk about season three of Channel Zero, which goes by the title of Butcher's Block.
I was wondering if I could talk to you about my sister. I took this job for her. We just needed a fresh start. Didn't even matter where.
Your worst fear is that you're gonna become me, isn't it? And if there's nothing you can do about it.
Where have you been?
I met a man. The air was trembling all around him. It was flies. And they came together all in one voice, and it said, he could fix me.
What did you do to my sister?
In this place, away from craziness and cruelty, I will help you.
Don't you just want to be taken care of?
No pain.
You love me, fair.
Don't be afraid.
Very hungry.
You're changing. Embrace it.
And of course, the series was created and showrun by Nick Antosca. And if I butchered your last name, please forgive me. And this season was directed by Arkasha Stevenson, and that's a name we'll be hearing a lot this year, because she is also directing the upcoming Omen prequel, which is coming out later this year. So this season of the show is based on the creepypasta story Search and Rescue Woods by Kerry Hammond. And the plot summary for this season is: a young woman and her schizophrenic sister move to a city haunted by a series of disappearances, and after suspecting that they may be connecting to a baffling rumor, they must work together to discover what is preying on the city's residents. Now, Marcy, you and I have covered the two previous seasons of Channel Zero. And you, like you stated before, we were both big fans of those series and how they kind of approach these creepypasta stories. But my question for you is, where does Butcher's Block rank among the previous seasons of the show? And what did you think of it overall?
Yeah, I actually was going to try and find the creepypasta and check it out like I did with the other two, but I ended up kind of forgetting and not getting around to it. So I do like to have some kind of context after I've seen it. So I can't really compare it in that way, but I really, really liked this season. In terms of comparing it to the other two, I think they're all really strong seasons, and they all have this, they're all obviously different stories, but there's a different tone, different atmosphere. Sometimes they do share cast, but the characters are very different, but you get characters that you really care for, and it each goes with a very different story. And I quite enjoyed it. It was not at all what I was expecting. I didn't really read anything like I did with the others. I just went into it, and it was, again, not what I expected, but in a good way. And it definitely does not have subtle themes with some of it. And I actually think it works in its favor because it just adds to, I can't think of the right word, but it just adds to the story and how they're telling it in a way. So I quite liked that. And I really liked the characters. I really liked the actors as well. And yeah, visually, I thought it was really, really, really well done. The stairs look creepy as fuck. And I don't care what's going on. I ain't going up weird stairs in the fucking park that just appear on occasion. No, thank you. But yeah, it does tackle a lot of themes with fears of mental illness, but also what we consume and put in our bodies. And I'm sure we'll get to that a bit more as we hear from you both about it.
Indeed. And Nathaniel, tell us your thoughts on season three of Channel Zero, Butcher's Block, but have you seen the previous seasons before this one?
I have. In fact, I was so keen for it the minute that I discovered that it was an actual thing, because I've always been fascinated by creepypastas whenever it comes to any sort of urban phenomenon or anything that is to do with stuff that we don't know fully about us as, you know, as humans. And for it to be able to be turned into a show that is just to do with some things that you think might be real or it might not be, or it might stem from other areas that you aren't entirely familiar with, I was hooked from the very beginning. Like season one and two were my absolute go-to seasons of probably those 2 years that it even existed. But season three was a bit of a disappointment for me, mainly because I knew about the stories of what it was based on. The actual director or the creator came out and said that this is the first time that he actually went away from it. And I was like, okay, well, that's fine. If you were to say that it's something else entirely, like you just call it Butcher's Block and it was an entirely different show, there was a miniseries, I think I would have liked it a lot more. But since it was supposed to be based on someone else's story and they just completely butchered it, if you will, it just felt a little bit lacking to me, which is sad because it's violent, it's gory, it's probably one of the most fucked up seasons of the series. And I gave it probably a lower score than season four.
Interesting. I completely understand where you're coming from, and that's part of the reason why I didn't want to read the story beforehand, which is what I did with the other ones. Creepypastas, like I know some of them, the more well-known ones, but it wasn't something I really got into, I think because I guess of my age, but urban legends were at the time told from person to person. And then as we got dial-up internet, we could find these things online. And I probably overdid it back in those days where I just didn't really, you know, look into anything. But I do like that creepypasta is kind of the equivalent of telling urban legends at sleepovers or whatever, like the newer generation of it. And there's a lot of interesting creativity that goes into those. But yeah, Bead.
Yeah, well, that's the thing about Channel Zero. Every time we've sat down to watch this show for the series, and it's interesting because I try not to go into knowing too much about him because I'd rather be kind of surprised about what direction the season is going to go into. And I was pleasantly surprised about the first two. So with Butcher's Block, I wasn't sure what to expect for the first episode, but as it kind of goes further into its story, like, it definitely is far more ambitious compared to the first two seasons, even though they both had pretty ambitious stories at the center of them. But you can definitely tell that Nick and Costa and the makers behind this show wanted to do something that is even bigger than the previous ones. Because watching this series, like, there's a lot of influences of other different types of works throughout all of this. Like, if I had to describe Butcher's Block, I would say, imagine if it's like Alice in Wonderland, Candyman, Phantasm, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Ready or Not, and a bit of cosmic horror put into a blender. Yeah, then you would have Butcher's Block. And
it just sums it up pretty well.
Essentially, yeah, because there's a little bit of everything from those ones that I mentioned, but it's a very unique show. And I found it quite compelling. Like, it definitely is a bit slow moving in parts, but like the two previous seasons, the tone, the atmosphere, and the unsettling vibe that it has does reel you in. And like the two previous seasons, there's a lot of creepy imagery throughout this six-episode season, and the performances are really strong. Like, I was really compelled by the characters, and I like the fact that you think one character is kind of be the kind of our big main protagonist, but then it kind of switches gears halfway through the season.
Yeah, that quite surprised me. I wasn't expecting that. And where you see the characters at the start of the first episode is then completely opposite when it ends. Did that sort of catch you off guard as well, Nathaniel?
A little bit. Because the way that they were trying to portray it was, you know, going through the motions of trying to be able to have one, you know, sister look after the other, and then it completely 180s it, and it's actually the sister that was being looked after that is able to push forward and realize that, you know, like, the depiction of mental health that they did in that season is probably the highest rated level that I've seen when it comes to an actual TV series, but it also shows that you can live with it. And that's what I found to be the best part of it.
Yeah. And I think that's shown within those two characters quite well as that story progresses. Back to you, Bede.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's interesting with this season on how it deals with mental illness, especially if it is passed down from family members, because you have the character of Zoe, who from the very beginning does have schizophrenia, and then of course her sister Alice, again not very subtle, which is why her name is called Alice, but then
God, how did I not get that?
Honestly didn't even click to me either.
I was thinking of a rabbit hole, but you go up the stairs. Stairs are not with rabbit holes up there.
didn't click to me either. Alice going the opposite way?
Yes.
Exactly. It's like kind of taking the Alice of Wonderland story and kind of doing a different spin on it. And
Alice in Upperland.
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of it being about taking all kinds of drugs, it's dealing with the thing that you probably take the drugs for.
Exactly. And then, of course, over the course of the series, you have Alice, played by Olivia Lucardi, who was actually in, and I just looked up if I'd seen her in anything before, and she was actually in the film It Follows. So I was like, oh yeah, I recognize her now. So she was one of the friends.
She looks so fucking familiar.
Yeah, and her arc throughout the series is interesting because she's there to kind of look after her sister, but she's also affected by the trauma of their mother, since she's also suffering the same illness. But over the course of the series, she starts to get a fear that she too may also be suffering from schizophrenia as well. And then once she kind of gets more involved with the Peach family, yeah, exactly. And essentially it's like, and when they kind of offer her the solution, like they could take that illness away, like she just fully goes for it. And it's a really interesting kind of seeing these two, both these characters, with like terrified of the prospect of having some kind of mental illness, and then by the end of the series both of them being at peace with the fact that they do have mental illness. And I know this is like very early in the episode, we're basically giving everything away, but this is a spoiler podcast after all. But I just think I think how it's handled in this season was actually pretty well handled. I'm kind of curious to hear what your thoughts on that, Marzi.
Yeah, no, I agree with you both. I think it's one of the better depictions of mental health, but also giving it the visual representations as well, because unless you actually suffer from something, you don't know what it's like, and you never will. And I think in the way that it's done here, it is very terrifying, and you can understand in ways like how terrifying having something like that might be. But I just think that it's very non-judgmental about mental health, which I think is very important, and the struggles that someone will go through, like if you know that this could happen or it's already happened to you, and all sorts of that stuff. So I think it's pretty well rounded with that, and some of the imagery associated with the schizophrenia, like the little, looked like a little face tumor on the brain. It's very creepy, but then there's like this big headed version of it that physically chases her, which is also very like, go away. Don't like it.
And that's the thing about this series. So I'm really enjoying it so far, is the makers behind the show just know how to craft these specific images and creatures that we've never seen before in any other horror film or TV shows. Like, I mean, Marcy, this is the show that gave us a monster that was made entirely out of human teeth, and that was terrifying.
And that still gives me fucking nightmares. I don't want to think about it. My teeth feel sensitive again. Don't bring it up.
It's so well done, though.
It really is. It's
every time I see him, I'm like, I want popcorn.
I mean, that also is true, but it is one of the creepiest things. Like,
yes.
Anyway.
Indeed. And also the series kind of just throws a couple of curveballs every now and again in terms of the plot. But also, I got to say, the big highlight for this season for me is, of course, that Rutger Hauer plays the film's main villain. And as you would expect, Rutger Hauer is fantastic, as he always is.
Always.
And even though, yeah, it's like we've seen him play villain roles before, but he's just so magnetic when he's on screen. And he kind of brings a lot of interesting layers to his performance here. And being that he is a man who's driven by grief, who basically decides to give into this cult, to do this ritual to appease this god that he is worshipping to bring his daughters back. And like, it, you could definitely kind of get like where he's coming from in terms of his motivations. But at the same time, he and his family, they're really fucking creepy.
Yeah. Yeah, because I didn't know anything about this season going in. I didn't even know he was in there in the show till, he's there. And may he rest in peace. What a fantastic actor he's always been from the very early days.
Mm.
And what I think, like, he always brings something different when he plays a villain. They're never the same.
Mm.
And I think that's what makes him quite memorable, but he has a lot of charisma and he could probably act like in his sleep because he was just so good. And he's definitely a highlight. And I think we see the right amount of his character, Joseph Peach, because when he's on, it is very sinister, but you can understand being drawn to him because he is very charismatic and magnetic. So if I saw him in the park, I'd probably follow him up the stairs before trying to escape because it's creepy in there.
I was going to say, LaFadiel, your thoughts on Rutger Hauer in this film? I mean, it's a series.
film. Miniseries, anyway, yeah.
Yes.
I thought it was electric. I mean, whenever he was on screen, I think that's what sort of cemented in that he was probably one of the highlights of this season. Mm. The way that I saw his performance was a interesting combination of one of his earliest ones when he was in The Hitcher, with that calm sort of crazy psychotic nature, but you know that the ones that are always the most silent are often the most deadly. Especially when, you know, you start to see that a little bit of rage is starting to come into him, but he doesn't depict it in his face. You can see it in his eyes and you can just see that he wants to snap at any moment. A little bit of his over the topness, which we saw very, very slightly, that represents Hobo with a Shotgun, which I mean, is still another one of his great performances. And honestly, a little bit of that grief that I saw from him when it comes to his daughters and then later on what happens in the actual season, I could see and feel a lot of that pain when it came to his portrayal in Observation, the Xbox, PlayStation, PC game that came out from Bloober. So there were a lot of different avenues that he went down that I think he didn't just select one. And you sort of look at him as not just the creepy uncle, but he also has this demeanor that means that you want to trust him as if he is actually your grandpa. So, and that's what is most terrifying about it.
Mm. Yeah. It's usually the unsuspecting ones, like you said, the quiet ones. And that's what makes those kinds of characters like very unsettling. So I think he knew how to do it. Like the Hitcher is a great example of that. He doesn't have that much screen time, but you feel his presence all through that movie and he's fucking terrifying. I would never pick up a hitchhiker, but I was talking about hitchhiker.
My bad.
Not the hitchhiker, fucking hell.
Hitcher.
But I mean, if he was hitchhiking as this character, maybe you trust him a bit more. I don't know.
I know I would, but
not the first 10 minutes, not from what I saw.
But also what I really liked about this season is how lived in the world of this season was. Like, this one's kind of more like, yeah, the two sisters, Alice and Zoe, they move away to this town. But the way how the town is all set up, it felt very believable, like it was downtrodden and dirty and gritty. And that's where I kind of brought the whole sort of Candyman comparison to what I mentioned before, was it has that kind of vibe, but also this is a town where all that is definitely driven by urban legends. And you can also see that there's graffiti and everything about the Peach family all over town. And I really like how it does this world building in this season. I think it was just really well done. And also, even when they have the scenes of the park where it has all the kids playground stuff there, but there's so much like overgrown grass, it just makes it more unsettling. And then of course, once those giant stairs come into play, and they're so visually striking that, yeah, I just really like how ambitious the world building was in this season. And then once Alice goes through the front door and just sees the house, and it's like all this just vast like field of flowers, and it's again, it's just so visually striking and feels very believable without it ever being overdone in terms of the visual look of it all.
Like visually it looks really, really good, and I did not even like think about Candyman, but you're right, there is a bit of that in there. But also having that focus on the more poor area is where the bad stuff happens, and obviously relating that to real life because that's unfortunately how things can be. But yeah, it is like really on a visual level, like it's really interesting to look at because we get different areas and scenes and like that vast field and then the big giant house, but also the weird house that the sisters move into, and the older lady who for some reason is Norman Batesing it with the taxidermy, which then comes into play like a few episodes later.
She's amazing though.
Krisha Fairchild, she actually started this film I saw a couple years back called Krisha. She was the lead in that, and she was great in that film, and she's great here. Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that you would think like, oh, they're probably obviously setting her up to possibly be a villain, but no, she ends up being one of the heroes of the film. Oh, I mean, series. I keep saying series.
This is why everyone's getting confused. Are we watching a series, a film? I don't know. But yeah, no, she was fantastic, and I really liked the very quirky character that she plays. And she's quite standoffish with some people, but you kind of get a sense there's a reason for that. And obviously you don't delve too much into her character, but you kind of get the sense like she is kind of alone for a reason, but then she ends up, you know, because what's happening to the girls relates to the disappearance of her brother many years earlier, that this kind of little bond starts to form. And as well as with the, the police officer who doesn't have the greatest time in this movie. Fuck, now you're making me do it in this series, season.
Yeah, well, that character, Officer Vanchick, and I probably butchered the character's last name, so please forgive me, played by Brandon Scott. He also kind of goes through an arc because when he meets the sisters for the first time and they tell him about all this weird stuff, he just treats it like it's all a joke and doesn't take it seriously at all. But once he arrests a guy and then he goes to check on him later and he finds him naked eating some entrails out of a prisoner's stomach, like,
well,
he's
still alive.
Exactly. And like he fully believes it. And then he realizes his dad is involved with this as well. And then there was a shocking scene halfway through the series as well. And at one point, his dad slits his throat.
Yep. It's a lot happens. Lathaniel, I feel like me and Bede are talking a lot.
Yes.
No, I'm just taking it all in.
Do you want to give some input into these characters and these scenes?
Well, when it comes to the supporting cast, I thought that the one who absolutely sold the friggin' show was the brother Robert. He just, like, I could see him being a frickin' joker in another lifetime. Just the way that he betrays himself and the fact that he also has this purge-like persona about him where he cares more about his clothes and his hair and himself than the lives of everyone else around it. And the fact that he actually says this in a way, then he's like, and referring to the cop as mouse, which is also a term of endearment. But at the same time, there are so many different moments of actual, like metaphorical, but also really, really physical moments that show the upper class that are battling the lower class. Even when it comes to the staircase leading up, because you've got this beautiful marble staircase that leads you up into what a lot of people would call paradise. And that's what, you know, Joseph actually says that what is this place? And, you know, he literally answers it by saying my own little slice of paradise. Exactly what he wanted, but obviously there are a few little things that aren't part of it, and I'm sorry, but If I ever see carrot fingers, I'm trying it, but I will probably throw up immediately afterwards. But it's just interesting to see that level of depiction that shows the upper class battling the lower class, and the fact that you've got the upper class that are dressed in the 50s, and the style and the way that they always portray themselves seems to be in that area of sophistication, as if they are better than everyone else. And then you see the other people who wear the standard casual clothes, which is what we all wear nowadays, which we would look at and think to ourselves, well, we are more upper than that. But then you look around and you see that there's just graffiti everywhere, and everyone seems to be living in this area of absolute poverty, that no one has even cared about anything that goes on around here. I mean, you've literally got so many different missing persons cases that they couldn't even care about what goes on. And then the minute that someone who gets involved, who turns out to be the actual freaking deputy's son, gets too involved, he does not hesitate to be able to make sure that his wrongs are righted and that his family is secure by literally killing off his family member, which is just fucking powerful and insane, to say the least. So I think that a lot of the characters in this are a lot more memorable than the other seasons. When it comes to season one and two, I think there are only the main characters that were memorable. Everyone else, I feel, just sort of fades into the background a little bit, to the point where I couldn't even really remember their names if you were to tell me. But when it comes to this, I will say that being the one of the only seasons that has not been built from the ground up on, you know, the bones of an actual storyline from a creepypasta, they certainly did a good job of being able to keep my attention with everyone, every single character.
Yeah, the character of Robert was one of the highlights for me. That actor just played it stupendously. And it was almost like he escaped a David Lynch movie or something.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm like, this dude could have like shown up randomly in Twin Peaks and felt at home.
I could feel that.
Yeah. But yeah, with the that upper and lower class, like that's definitely, I think, maybe one of the, it's a bit more subtle than some of the other themes in it, but it's definitely very much there because, as we'd mentioned with like Candyman, these areas that are poor, I have all this graffiti relating to the legend and stuff, and you definitely see that this town is a lot poorer than it was because of what the Peach family, or I guess with Joseph Peach, what they did, which was taking away the big factory from the town and just doing their own little slice of paradise. And the town suffers and hasn't really recovered. And because this is, you know, they run the town, essentially. People go missing, nothing's done, because they have the, you know, police chief in their pocket. And it's done in such a way that that police chief almost doesn't hesitate to slit his son's throat, who is just trying to help. And that was one of the most shocking moments. And I was sitting there like, oh my God, I hope he's not dead. I hope he's not dead. And it's a good thing, I can't remember the character's name, but Krisha Fairchild was watching from afar and you taxidermy and stitched him up. It was fabulous and I loved it. As at the time of recording, the trend on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it, is this is who I would pick for my season of True Detective. Well, I'd choose that detective and Krisha Fairchild as the yes. two leads for True Detective or whatever that show is called.
Well, I do love how in the second half of the season, it basically is them paired up together and they're great together. And luckily we get a bit of a context because you think, oh, he got his throat slit. How is he still alive? But she does mention at a certain point, like, luckily your dad didn't hit any big major arteries when he slit your throat. So hence why he was able to live. And then he, of course, once she does her taxidermy work on her, on his neck, the dad does come back in the play. The dad suggests like they need to get out of here. But then the son shoots the dad.
I could see it coming. I was just like, well, good. I didn't like him either.
I'd be like, yeah, I probably would have done that too, mate. I got no problems with that.
Actually, it's funny you've been mentioning the Twin Peaks vibe, Marcy, because that I got that from this season as well. I mean, the previous two seasons definitely had that kind of surreal Lynchian kind of vibe, but this one really piles it on even more so. And I was just like looking up information. One of the writers of this season, Harley Penton, actually wrote Twin on a couple episodes
Wow.
of Twin Peaks.
Well,
So.
there you go. So it might have been a bit of a bit of an influence there.
Oh, definitely.
Now we haven't touched on one of the other big themes on this. I've kind of alluded to it a bit. And it look as the way I take it, I'm almost confused as to what the real message might be. But I would love to get you guys' input on what you thought about it. And I'm, of course, talking about cannibalism and veganism and
Going down this road, are we?
yes, we are. We
Yeah.
kind of have to. And this is the theme that wasn't subtle at all. Like there is a scene where there's human meets at the table as it is, and one of the characters, I think it's like the stepdaughter of Joseph Peach.
Oh, she's weird.
She
Oh,
was
she's
great.
so weird. Yeah,
Very
she.
weird.
Oh, I loved her. She when she came in, the actress who played her, Diana Bentley, who played Edie Peach, she was great, and I love it. She uses a southern accent for her performance. She's like got that job. Oh, I'm from the south, and nice to meet you. And it's just like underlying of creepiness to that
Oh,
performance that.
yeah.
And she's so good at every scene that she's in. It's
She's
very Don't Worry,
great.
Darling. Yeah.
Yes, she's really good. But at the table, she's like, "Oh, you need protein. That's why the vegans don't live long or some shit like that." So,
Yeah. It's like a
and
slap in the face for
it
anyone who likes vegetables.
yeah. But it is I didn't quite get what the message could be. Should we not eat meat or should we eat human meat? Should we grow human meat as fruits and vegetables? I'm not quite sure. So I'll hand it over to you boys.
Well, I think the message of this series was if you've been offered to eat other people, just eat yourself. Which is what Zoe does when she's often.
Zoe doesn't give in to the cannibalistic cravings and eats her own like muscle tissue. And I guess that's reminiscent of, is it called Raw, where she's
Yeah.
also cannibal? Yeah. I haven't seen that one, but I know of it. So I was wondering if that was, I don't know,
You've got to watch
inspired
Raw.
by, but I'll watch it. Don't worry. Cannibals are just weird enough, but auto cannibals, I'm like, I'm
What?
really hungry. Maybe I could just eat a part of my body and just get skinny.
But it's going back in you, so it defeats the fucking purpose.
Yeah, but what if I will get crapped out? I don't know. Anyway.
Like where this conversation is going.
Anyway,
That
back
means you're
to
full of your own crap. I'm sorry, I had to say it.
Oh,
Darling, you've met me before, you know that's true.
well, it doesn't surprise me like this season of the show kind of goes down the whole like, is this series trying to say something about eating meat or veganism with its depiction of cannibalism? And again, knowing that Nick and Tosca worked on the third season of Hannibal as well, like
Oh, that makes sense.
it also kind of makes sense. But then again, we've
Is
seen
that why
this.
the human meat looks so delicious?
Yes.
Stop turning me into a cannibal. I'm not a cannibal, but
Just once.
damn, these foods look good.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. I kind of wanted an ear wafer, to be honest.
Yeah, I'll just like, yeah. The
Like, I want a
parfait.
crunch on that.
Right.
The way they did that meat, I was like, my God, it's the most tender I've ever seen it. I just,
It looks so good.
And now every one of your listeners are thinking, why do we listen to them again?
Why are they cannibals now? What's happening?
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised because I know they had a well-known chef do the cooking on Hannibal. So I wouldn't be surprised if they brought that same person on to do the meals in this season of the show as well.
Someone similar, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess, the whole, I didn't know what the message, if it was on one side or the other, or if it was even trying to say maybe because you have two different beliefs, you should just coexist. I don't know.
Yeah, well, at the end of the season, one of the last scenes we see the characters together is them sitting around a table having lunch. And I think they sort of, Krisha Fairchild mentions oh, yeah, we're just having a, this is vegetarian what we're having.
Yeah.
Vegetarian Greek meal that I can't remember.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which one it was. But I mean, after all they'd experienced, do you think they'd want to eat meat?
No.
At least straight away, even though it was a year later. it's because it's such a big part of the story. Because they, and then it made me wonder, did the Peaches family actually, when they were not in the other place before that, was their meat factory, actual animals, or did they have humans? But I don't know if we ever got any clue if that was it.
It was subtly implied that they said that missing persons cases were happening before the plant even shut down. The reason why the plant shut down was because of the loss of his two daughters. Mm. And that's when, he apparently went missing. But we already know that he just took his family and made this deal with his god. But they did subtly imply that it was supposed to do with the fact that there were workers, that apparently every single father or son going down generations at one point or another worked in Peach's meatpacking plant. But if that's the case, where are majority of them? So there might be a lot of them that are there, but then there are other missing person cases that goes back so damn far that we saw on that massive cork board that what's her name again?
What was the character's child, name? I can't remember.
The old Krisha, lady.
Louisa. Yeah.
Louisa.
Yeah. Yeah.
That Louisa had on her board, and we were looking at it. We only just got subtle ones, and I really do wish, because I actually love the show so much that I bought the Blu-rays, think that maybe I should go back and pause at different moments and just read the different notes that are there, because there are so many of them that go by so quickly that there are even a moment where Joseph looks at the board himself and he sees all of this, but the one thing that catches his eye is his two daughters. But I really do think that he and his family had something else that was going on there. That you could not go from being such a kind person in this community to being a cannibalistic monster that wants to live forever by any means necessary. So that's what I saw.
I think there could have been that cannibalistic thing before all that happened. Especially if, I can't remember what episode it was, but there's a weird ad for the Peaches meat.
Oh, yeah. I think that was the second episode, I think, or the second or third one.
As I'm watching it, I'm like, I feel like they're just serving human meats.
Because the way the meat slams onto the plate, it's got this weird slap. Mm. And did you also notice the way that she puts it on the plate?
Yes, yes.
It's very, very I don't give a shit about this. Sort of a way of being a metaphor that we are top of the food chain and they're at the bottom of the food chain. So there's a lot of subtle hints as to what is happening. But to answer your question, Marcy, about what you said when it comes to veganism and stuff like that, for me, I personally feel that it is the literal depiction of you are what you eat, but in a sense of not as you actually eating yourself, even though we see that, but having it as that reminder of you are what you do to everyone else around you. That if you treat them with the same kindness and respect, they will give it back to you. There are others who may take advantage of you. And when it comes to that, it is up to you to decide if it is the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do. So I think that the food process of what they showed was just a symbolic metaphor for how the entire world is supposed to be able to work and how they are supposed to be able to coexist together when it comes to being an animal for sustenance and when it comes to being a human for living.
I think that actually makes a lot of sense. So, yeah, I'm glad I brought that up.
Also, like, a couple little things that I would like to talk about. Like, we got to talk about a little bit about the little people actors in this film portraying, I believe.
Theories be.
I did it again. Sorry. In this season.
Season. Fuck.
Season of the show.
It's going to be impossible to edit.
Yep. Oh, well, we're keeping this all in. But anyways, because people love this stuff. But anyways, the little people actors in this season of the show. Now, this is the Phantasm kind of comparison I made for the series is the, I believe they're meant to be Edie and one of Joseph's son's children, all these sort of deformed looking children. Throughout, yeah. Maybe, I think, because it's never really explained because she's always pregnant every time we see it.
It's not explained, but it feels like that baby she has, doesn't that get given to the god?
That's what I thought.
So then I was kind of confused, like, what are these? Are these meant to be representations of children they lost or something? But then again, there was too many.
I thought it was representations of their illnesses. Because they had been getting older and older and older, and they had to have been pulling them out each time. And, like, because honestly, the way that you look at schizophrenia, in some strange way, it looks like it is just a different formation of it, whether it be an eating disorder or whether it be, you know, like depression or anxiety or anything like that. That shows it. And the reason why they have to keep them with them is also a way of showing that you can't fully get rid of them. You still have to love them for what they are and who you are.
Which makes sense as to, I think it's, Zoe has the represent.
So, such a good representation.
And the scene where they, you know, he gives them the procedure. It's quite horrifying, but actually, again, what you're saying makes a lot of sense. And now that you've said it, I'm like, yeah, why didn't I think of that? Where's my brain gone?
I'm just surprised they didn't, you know, actually explain it to us. I mean, they didn't even explain to us who fucking Meat Guy was either.
He was just meats. I don't know, maybe he escaped that Mortal Kombat game where they had... that's what I thought of.
Well, that is a good point. Like, I keep forgetting about the Meat Guy and, like, what his part in the whole thing is. I guess he kind of serves the god that Joseph and his family worship.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah, the god thing, like, that design really cool. It's very creepy. I didn't think we'd really get to see anything. I think they had it on screen enough that it had an impact, but it didn't stay too long to lose that impact. But again, yeah, the meat creature just randomly walking through the field at
the end of it. I'm like, are we supposed to be feeling happy or sad for him? Yeah. I don't know what to feel here.
I guess the only interpretation I could think of is like he's going to go find somebody else and have them serve his master.
That makes sense.
Because at the end of the day, because we get the scene at the end where since they didn't deliver the sacrifice to their god, the god's like, oh, well, it blows them all up. Particularly,
scanners.
Yeah, like Rutger Hauer's, but and I love that his last line, it is like his last line in the show is, you sick fuck. And then he just blows up and you see it in gory graphic detail as well.
Yeah, it looked like a mixture of practical and CG, but I'm not sure what the case was. But it is very gruesome, and we knew there would be consequences, and I'm like, yeah, that's a pretty decent consequence.
And I would say it's like, this would definitely, out of all the seasons we've watched so far, this is definitely the goriest one that we've seen so far.
Yeah, look, that scene in the prison cell alone
is
full on. Like, you've not seen someone eating someone else's guts while the other person is still technically alive.
Except in Hannibal.
Hannibal usually cooked them, though, didn't he?
No, yeah. He also, sometimes, when the going gets tough,
fair.
In the books, he did as well.
Well, yeah. It's been a while since I've seen or read anything, but I do want to revisit the Hannibal show because it's just so good. That scene is one that will stick with me because it's so weird. You're not going to see something like it, and it's fucking gross.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And also, Marcy, one thing I was shocked about with this season of the show is that randomly Julian Richings pops up out of nowhere as the gardener for the peaches.
He's so good when he's on screen, though.
So random, but yeah. It's so, that whole, like, once you get through the stairs and it's that field thing, it's so bizarre and he's just casually there. Farming the freaking carrot finger things, like, okay.
I really and want him, fish fingers now.
Yep, and also him, like, telling, like, Alice and Zoe riddles.
They were very clever riddles.
I know, I didn't guess them.
It's funny, because one of them, I was just like, the soul, and then she goes, window, and I'm like, fuck!
I think the one I did get correctly was the door one. That was the one that I got correctly.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know. I was like, I'm terrible at riddles.
And also, I kind of had the pop as well during a scene where they're doing a ceremony and then a song by Philip Glass. Like, the same track that they used in Watchmen is played over that. See, I know it's not from Watchmen. It was done for a documentary a long time ago, but I can't remember the name of the documentary, mainly because I can't even pronounce the title of it. but it was reused for effect in Watchmen, and it's used again for great effect here as well.
Yeah. It's, look, for the most part, like, I really enjoyed the season. I like that all the seasons are very different, and I like that each season has a different director, but it's the same director for that season, which I think helps set them apart from each other. But yeah, so it's still an anthology, but each season has a distinctness to it while still feeling part of the same show. I was trying to think if there was anything we may have missed in discussing the season, because, I mean, a fair bit happens, but it is also a slow burn, which I quite liked because it kept me quite intrigued with it.
Well, for me, the one thing that they didn't really manage to be able to explain much of was the crazy neighbor that had the bandages on her hands when we first meet her. And it's like, you know, oh, I can see that you're also bound by it. Let me cut you free. They didn't really explain what was going on and whether or not it was just part of that. But then at the end of the show, she was someone who actually helped and managed to, you know, look past it. I mean, even then, Louise's character hated this woman right at the start. And at the end of it, she was okay with her. So maybe it was a way of showing that she was, like, able to understand that even though she had these mental illnesses, that she could still sort of see her as a person, if that was what they were going for. But I feel like they just kind of threw away that character, because if she was being hunted for meat, then and Robert really had no problem with being able to taser her right there on a freaking police cop's car in the middle of the day, then it just seemed a little strange to me that she would just leave. I felt like she would have a lot more impact to the story. Like, we discovered that, you know, she was one of the people who the Peaches actually did speak to. She's one of the survivors. She left, and maybe that's one of the little people's, maybe that was one of her things, that it was there, but it grew back, because Joseph did say that it will continue to come back, but as long as you stay here with me, I can make sure that that doesn't happen. So maybe there have been other people who have gone through this, that he seems to be seeking out people who have got that mental health area, because it seems to be the easiest to be able to manipulate. And if you were able to do that, and let's just say, for the argument's sake, like a doctor would, the minute that you would see that and you have someone who's saying it to you and they seem like a really trustworthy person, you're going to go along with everything they say. It might not necessarily be true. The more that I think about it, it actually am starting to feel like there's a lot more layers that were not really explored. And that's why I don't like this season as much as the others. And I'll tell why. I will say why, but you guys say first.
Like, yeah,
if there's anything else.
Yeah, because I'd almost forgotten that that character was there, because she only shows up a little bit, but nothing's done with her. But it makes sense if she was in the position of those sisters years before and got tempted to be part of the family and then eventually left, and she's just stuck in the state that she is. But yeah, Bede.
Well, I was going to say the actress who plays the character of the Scissor Woman, that's what I'm reading right now, Paula Baudreau, I'm fine butchering your name, please forgive me. Actually, it's one of two roles she plays in the series. She also plays Alice and Zoe's mum as well.
Wait, that was the
same actress. Oh, no way!
It was the same actress.
No way!
What if she wasn't real?
That is a good point. And you know, it's funny though, before I discovered this, I was like sitting there watching the show thinking, The Scissor Woman and Alice and Zoe's mum look kind of similar. I wonder if it's the same actress. And that's why I kind of looked up, and it confirmed that it's the same actress playing Rob. Both those.
Yeah, I'm doing the horror returns right now. I did not pick up.
I would not have been able to pick that up.
Maybe there's a similar, because she obviously, Scissor Woman obviously does have mental illness herself. So maybe in a way that her character is what the girls see when they see her, because she's the first person they meet when they move to the neighborhood. So maybe in a way, it's, and this is just me talking out of my ass right now, like they see her and they realize, oh, she's crazy. And the first image they pick up is their mum. And that's who they visualize on that character.
And every time that we see her, we only see them when it comes to one of the sisters that is in the same room. It's never someone else. So maybe what we were seeing is what they were seeing, but what every other person was seeing was a different person entirely.
Mm. Oh, definitely.
That
definitely
could be possible. And I think that still leans into the idea that the Scissor Lady, which is a weird name, that she could have perhaps been under the Peach influence in that up the stairs place, but then left. So
true.
But also, it's interesting, like, with this series, because we talked about this on the first season, Marcy, because we thought, oh, those two twin boys in the first season, oh, they were so great together. But then we found that it was the same actor playing both roles.
That was a shock.
It's very well done that they've done that, to be able to have all those different shots where they've got both of them in the same area, and it looks like it is entirely happening there. It's not green screened in any way.
And it's basically kind of the same thing. Maybe not exactly the same, because it's two different characters played by the same actress, but the fact that we didn't know that this was the same actor playing both roles is kind of all of our minds.
That just adds something extra that I hadn't even considered with this show.
Now I'm starting to think that maybe that's the subtle thing that happens in every season, because even in No End House, which was season two, there were two of the fathers.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
Huh. Wow.
Now I got to go back and check season four and see if there's something.
I'm going to have to keep a lookout when we get to season four now.
Well, I have, that's
kind of blown my mind now.
That's blown my mind too. I never thought about the whole double aspect in all the series so far. That my mind is blown right now. Because it has been a while since we tackled season two, Marcy. And even then, I don't think we even thought about this connection even in that second season.
We're just uncovering all sorts of things with this now.
I this is what I do. I come in here and then I start talking way too much and everyone's like, oh, no. And then I'm like, oh no, what have I done? I've opened up a fucking TED Talk here.
Welcome to my TED Talk. that's why I love discussing things like this with other people, because we're all probably you pick up different things and then you can share the knowledge and have something, you know, new to think about if you ever want to rewatch it.
The stuff that you've told me that I never would have even thought of. But speaking of, I want to get both of your depictions on what you thought of the god, the cosmos that was there, that they showed. Why were they revealing it as that? Do you think that it was going back in time, reversing it? Was a light flashing before our eyes? What did you think that was going on where Zoe Alice was looking right into the god's eyes and opened it up to reveal that cosmos? What do you think was going on there?
Because it is a god, and I suppose as we think of God as ruling the universe, this is that God. It's a universe, I suppose. But in a way, I feel like she saw like things with her life when she looked at it as well, but I'm not entirely sure. But yeah, the way I look at it is a God would, you know, consider themselves to rule the entire universe or see over the universe. So I think it could be that. But B, do you have any thoughts or theories?
Well, one of the first things I thought, because once we see the god, or at least the images of it before it's fully shown, and we see that it has giant antlers and that, I thought, oh, their god's a Wendigo. That's my first immediate thought that came into my... And that would explain the whole cannibalism aspect, but no, it wasn't that. But, you know, sort of thinking about it now, because we know that the god kills off all the Peach family, and then there is Alice is there, and you think, oh, is this thing going to kill off Alice as well? But once it actually shows the cosmos within itself, I think, again, this is the moment where Alice kind of comes to her realization and accepts the possibility that she has mental illness as well. And maybe
she does see her mother as well.
Yeah, she does. And maybe that's what...
I think it takes the form of her mother. I can't be entirely sure, but Alice has spent like all her life trying to run away from
her mother.
Her mental illness, I guess, because of her mother. And yeah, I think there is a realization, but I think that she hit that realization too late, which is why we see her with her mother in the hospital.
Yeah.
So she spent so long running from it, she didn't bother to just, you know, learn to live and take care of herself, which is then what the position Zoe's in at the end, which is why I find that a really interesting contrast between start and finish. But yeah, I think there's certainly something there to her acceptance and stuff. But yeah, continue.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Like, I think that's probably what the god was showing her in that moment, because once he does that, he just closes up his cloak and just heads off on his way. So
I'm off to go and trick some more people into giving stuff to me.
I guess because she accepted it, he had nothing to offer her to do that. So I think that also makes sense as to why it left. But yeah, I think that universe cosmos thing would definitely be, you know, this god is ruler of everything, kind of
beyond of space and time, and and then it kind of didn't get what it wanted and didn't see her as a sacrifice at all,
or that you used to make sacrifices.
Because and also, like, I think, wasn't it, maybe again I'm misremembering this, but wasn't it also that one of the reasons why he didn't pick her was because of her mental illness? could that be also a theory too? Because I remember in the scene where she's looking at the cosmos, we do get flashes of her life and that, and we also get the flash of the face as the end of the, her
schizophrenia face brain.
Actually. Because it's also the very first thing that they showed was the millipede or the centipede, and that was supposed to be a you know, symbolism for the mental illness that was there, which is why when Zoe ate it again, it just showed that she was able to accept it and leave. So maybe it was showing that, you know, she is tainted already. So I can't really have tainted meat.
Because
it needs to be fed.
That is true. That is true because they have to sacrifice that, and that's why they tried to sacrifice that little girl, because she's pure. Yeah. So because that's why. Yeah, and also like the reason he would have killed the Peach family is because, well, since they didn't give him the sacrifice, he's just going to claim that whole family as the sacrifice.
Well, yeah, that's pretty much, I think, what the deal was. Yeah.
Mm. See, we're covering a lot of things just talking about this season.
It's like, just uncovering so much now. I guess, so if there's anything else we want to discuss or wrap up the discussion?
Are we able to discuss where this originated from?
Oh, yes. I'm kind of curious because now that you said, Lathaniel, that the creepypasta that this season was based on is kind of barely based on that story, I'm kind of curious to see, how different is the original source material compared to the final product we got with this season.
So, funny thing, the only thing that is reminiscent of the source material is the staircase.
Oh.
That is it.
That's kind of what I thought when you mentioned that earlier. I'm like, maybe it's just the staircase thing and they've just added this whole other story to it.
And that's pretty much what it is. They said that there was a whole lot of missing persons cases, but the way that this is, it's different to how House of No Return and also Candle Cove did it, where it took a concept of it and they sort of built around it, but also kept in line with a lot of the different characters that were feeling them and the different stories that were depicting of them. This was different because this was a whole lot of different stories from different people's perspectives. And it all sort of goes back to an officer who is basically just sent into the woods, called out as a basically to search for someone that has been reported missing. And when he gets in there, he just sees a staircase and he doesn't really know what the staircase is. He calls it in. Everyone doesn't believe him. But there's this feeling of him wanting to go up it, but at the same time, he's so terrified that he doesn't know if it is it's a good thing to do so. But then what ends up happening is that he ends up coming back when he sees someone else go up it. And as he recalls, he sees someone as he's going up those stairs. She can't hear anything that's going on around him. She doesn't have any semblance of what is happening. All she has is just the wanting to go through this door. But he recalls that once she gets to the top and then she starts to be able to actually turn the handle, parts of her disappear. And as the parts are disappearing, the other parts of her that start to come out of it, where she, you know, starts to feel this immense pain, starts bleeding from everywhere. And different parts of her are just completely disappearing as her orifices are just bleeding all over the staircase until eventually her entire body is just consumed and it's gone. And there was like nothing ever happened. And he said that it's the one thing that's there. So he actually did retire from doing this because of all of these different cases. No one would believe him. No one would be able to understand him, but he always said the same thing, that if you ever see a staircase, don't look at it. Don't think about going up it, and whatever you do, just avoid it at all costs. It was interesting because it was like, I think maybe that was his last journal entry, but they were sort of depicting that he said he had nothing left to live for, so he decided to go up them anyway. And that was the last thing that he wrote. But it was in a park, it was a staircase, and that was it. everything that was to do with this whole, you know, butcher family with the peaches and schizophrenia and all these metaphors and symbolisms was all entirely made up by the creator. And, well, people who loved the creepypasta really ripped it apart because they loved season one and two because of how close to the source material it was. And this, it felt like they were just cashing in. Even to the point where the person who made the story, who had to sell the rights to the creator, almost sued them.
I mean, I can understand
it's sad
some of that stuff because it is just taking a little bit of some of these ideas from the story, which again, I haven't read it, but yeah, I don't know where they would have got all these other ideas. It could have been a mash of, you know, another script for something.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure, but like, I don't think something has to be like a faithful adaptation. If it can tell its own story while keeping the essence of what it's based on there, I think that is probably the way to do it, because you're not going to please everybody if you try to do a straight up adaptation. But I can understand people being like, oh, this is nothing like the story, where the other ones, I think, especially Candle Cove, a lot of that story is put into that season with the other stuff around it fleshed out to make, you know, a six episode season. But again, because I haven't read it, I can't really say one thing or another, but I understand if people were like shitted off because it wasn't that story, but this has told something entirely different, just taking this premise of mysterious stairs in the forest or woods or whatever it's meant to be. What about you? What do you think with that, Bede?
Well, that's the thing. Like, I guess like you, I don't really mind if something's not 100% faithful to anything, as long as what it sets out to do is still a compelling story in its own right. I mean, The Shining, Stanley Kubrick's film, is, from what people have told me, is barely even based on the book. And I can understand why some people hate the movie, because it's nothing like the book. But then again, I've seen the Mick Garris TV miniseries, and that's a faithful adaptation, and that miniseries was terrible. But
quiet, you. It's not that bad.
Okay, it was like a 2-star one, but that's beside the point. Anyways, but The Shining on its own as a film is still incredibly effective for what it is and what it set out to do. So I guess, again, like, I haven't read the original creepypasta that this is based on, so I can't compare it. But I think on its own for what it is, I still found it pretty compelling and very creepy and unsettling. Like, it's obviously, like I said before, what I mentioned, all the influences where this season would have obviously pulled from. I think what it does with all those different influences, taking specific things from the actual story with the staircase and people going up it and disappearing, I think they kind of fleshed it out a little bit to make it a much more ambitious kind of story. Because, like, could it been a solid season on its own with just,
probably not,
if it was, yeah, if it is like based entirely on the creepypasta without changing a word, yeah, but I feel like at the same time you need to add more meat, no pun intended, to the story to flesh it out. And I get what they sort of did with this season. I think they kind of did a really good job with that, but I can understand, like, fans' criticisms of that as well. But for me, I think all the added things to it is what made it compelling to me as a viewer.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree pretty much with that, because I think the story that it tells as a whole is pretty good. And yeah, I found it compelling as well. And again, as I mentioned, like, visually it's fantastic. And I think that there was just a lot of things going for it that I quite enjoyed. I think I probably would rate the other seasons maybe slightly higher, but I still would regard this pretty well, at least for my personal tastes.
Yeah, definitely. No, I would. In my opinion, season one and two are like masterclass. And this is a little bit lower, but that doesn't mean it's bad. It's still good from its own perspective, but being someone who was obsessed with creepypastas when he was growing up and seeing that they were going to be able to make a show out of these, and then it ended too soon. I am just glad that we got what we got.
It's almost sad, like, it's one more season that we have left, and I could have done 10 more seasons and probably enjoyed it, to be fair. I guess wrap up and rating speed.
Marcy, your final thoughts and rating on the season overall.
My final thoughts are I really enjoyed this season. As I said, I think I like the other ones a little bit more, but that doesn't mean this wasn't really good, strangely enjoyable with all the weird cannibalistic and horrific scenes and very confronting, scenes with mental illness. So if you haven't seen it, I mean, yes, we've ruined it. But I suppose, go into it knowing that it could potentially be triggering with some of that stuff. But yeah, I guess I would probably rate it for Robert, the blue suited guy eating intestines, out of 5. I couldn't think of a funnier rating system. That's all I could think of.
Indeed, indeed. And Lathaniel, your final thoughts and rating out of 5 for the season?
It gets to the meat of the issue quite quickly. Doesn't overstay its welcome, but just like a 3-course meal, it will keep you satisfied until the minute that you need to digest. And I would say that it's probably 3.5 carrot fingers out of 5.
If I had to give this a rating, I give this the same as I did with the 2 previous seasons. I give this about a 4 out of 5 as well. And that's 4 out of 7 heads from the Peach family out of 5. Because apparently that's the only way you can kill any of the family members is decapitating them. So
and keep their heads on display.
Exactly. And there was 4 heads there, Marcy. So hence the rating.
I want to see him bowl with Robert's head.
Yes. With him talking while
you're bowling. mouse.
Exactly. But yeah, I really enjoyed this season a lot. And I would say there are a lot of things about this season I actually found more interesting compared to the first 2, but it's still a pretty, like, it does have its flaws, but I don't know, there was something about this one where I was like really thinking back on it after I watched it compared to the first 2 seasons, as great as those seasons were. So yeah, I really like this season a lot, and I'm looking forward to our discussion in the future on the 4th and final season, which I'm also kind of sad about as well, since it's the last season of the show.
Hope you both enjoy it. It's really good.
I'm sure we will. And Bede, that wraps up this episode of Podcasters of Horror.
Indeed, indeed. Well, it's been a good episode. And thank you so much, Lathaniel, for coming on the show and talking about this season of Channel Zero with us.
Thank you for having me.
And, awesome. We'll give everyone a rundown of where they can find us and our stuff. Bede, you always pick on me to go first, so you go first.
All right. If people were to find me personally, they can find me on Twitter, Blue Sky, and Letterboxd under Bede Jemine as one word. And also you can find all my work at all the awesome other awesome podcasts that I co-host with you, Super Marcy, over at supermarcy.com, and as well as the Super Network on all podcast streamers everywhere. And for my solo show, Bede vs. the Living Dead, and as well as its spin-off show, Bede and C vs. Camp Crystal Lake, you can listen to those shows on the Bede vs. the Living Dead podcast feed on all podcast streamers everywhere. And in terms of social media for those shows, you can follow them on Twitter and Blue Sky under Bede vs. TLD, and as well as Facebook under Bede vs. the Living Dead.
Very nice. And for Podcasters of Horror and the Super Network, go to supermarcy.com or look up Podcasters of Horror on your podcast players. We are on all of them. Full episodes of this show specifically are on the Super Network YouTube channel, so you can find those there as well. And The Super Network is on the socials, and the easiest way to find everything is at the link tree. So just type in the Super Network with the link tree stuff before that. And I'm terrible at this, but whatever. If you want to find me for some reason, don't be a creep about it, but all right. Again, you could do the link tree thing, Super Marcy. You can find all the socials. But again, I'm on like Twitter X, whatever you call it, Instagram, Blue Sky, Threads. I can't even remember any of the other ones under Super Marcy. And the big important one, Letterboxd, is Super_Marcy. And you can see all my cool lists. I have Masters of Horror, all the episodes ranked in order under one of the lists there. So some lists related to the podcast. And you can see the weird shit I'm watching for whatever podcast we're doing. And I'll not forget, there is also After Dark with Super Marcy, a very adults-only podcast. And you can look that up and find that everywhere. And, of course, I'll promote it on my socials. Whew, that's a lot to get out. And Lathaniel, if people want to check out the work you do, the content you make, where can they find that?
Oh, if they're sure they want to, sure. All right.
They all should, damn it.
So you can find me streaming 4 days a week over on Twitch, which will be Lathaniel Gamers. But you'll also find me over on YouTube with Lathaniel Gamers too, as well as Lathe Plays. And you can also do the same thing with Instagram and Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it. There is a LinkedIn. So if you just type in Lathaniel Gamers LinkedIn, you'll find a Linktree, sorry. Shit. <Yeah. laughs> Linktree, you'll see all of it there. But I tend to upload to YouTube every week or so. Different videos that are usually mainly from the streams themselves. But when it comes to the streams themselves, anything and everything to do with horror, but we've also got community days and some movie nights as well on a Discord that you can always find out when you do come onto the actual stream. But yeah, follow me there. I'm very close to hitting partner. I've been trying to get it for 14 years on YouTube.
You're gonna get there.
But it was just, yeah. But I really do appreciate anyone if you do check me out.
Yeah, highly recommend it. I'm subscribed to Lathaniel's YouTube and Twitch. And I think one of my more favorite things, I think, in recent couple of years, honestly, I can't remember, might have been sometime last year, you played through the Saw games, because obviously we are both big Saw nerds. We went and saw Saw X at the special screening, and that was fantastic. But yeah, it was a lot of fun watching you play the Saw games, and the videos are on YouTube, so I highly recommend people check them out, because Saw is fucking awesome. And yeah, we'll also have all links and Linktree stuff in the show notes, because I'm always on top of that. And yeah, I've kind of taken over like hosting the show and finishing it off, but
indeed.
Yeah, until next time, be careful what you eat. I don't know.
That's a good one.
be careful. At the end of the day, don't make you can't make friends with salad. There you go.
There you go.
Don't eat yourself either.
Exactly. Exactly. But yes, we'll see you next time, everybody. Bye.
Toodles.